Maybe I'll just stop in.
I call this meeting of House Finance to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:31 p.m. Friday, February 17, 2023. Present with us today is Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Ortiz, Representative Pronk, Representative Tomaszewski, and myself, Co-Chair Johnson. We may have other people joining us by phone. We also have our LIO moderator, Emma Turner, thank you, and Leah Frazier, our finance secretary. And sometimes Leah Frazier looks like a different person. But we appreciate the finance secretary we do have today. Today we are receiving a presentation on the governor's budget presented by Neil Steininger, director for the Office of Management and Budget. Mr. Steininger, would you please come forward, put yourself on the record, and introduce any additional presenters if you would like. And welcome to House Finance. You may begin your presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, Neil Steininger, director of the Office of Management and Budget. So today I'm going over the governor's amendments to the governor's budget. So part of the budget process, we release the budget on December 15th each year, and then there's an opportunity for the governor to introduce amendments on the 30th day of legislative session, which was February 15th this year. And those amendments generally cover things that either, you know, weren't contemplated at the time we developed the budget in December, emergent issues that are, you know, new and require attention, or to simply correct errors or mistakes that we sometimes make as we produce the governor's budget. So today what I'll be going over are these amendments summarized on this table, about $9.2 million in amendments to the supplemental budget, and about $106.3 million to the FY24 budget in unrestricted general funds. When you add in federal funds, other funds, and designated general funds, you actually have a total of negative $43.9 million in the supplemental budget and $489 million in the FY24 budget. And my next slide will show those added onto our fiscal summary to give a high-level picture of the state's, the proposed budget from the governor.
And I would like to just mention that we've been joined by Co-Chair Edgman.
So on slide three, when you add those amendments into our December budget, you get a total of about $7.8 billion in unrestricted general funds in fiscal year 23, about $7.4 billion in fiscal year 24. In 23, those amendments effectively bring the K-12 forward funding deposit down to $0, effectively using all of the available projected revenue as of the December 15th revenue projections. And in fiscal year 24, the amendments bring the projected deficit based on the December 15th revenue projections to $433 million. Moving on, my slides, I have a couple of slides on some bigger items from the amended package. And then there's also spreadsheets detailing every one of the individual amendments that I'll be able to go through after I cover these kind of larger picture items that we've included. So one of the biggest issues that we've seen emerge since we released our budget in December is the issues occurring with the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender Agency in their ability to have the resources necessary to, you know, respond to the work through the trial backlog that occurred during COVID and base budget items that they need in order to ensure that they can provide for an adequate defense of the accused so that we can ensure that trials move smoothly and expediently. So to that end, in our amended budget, we added about $1.6 million in the fiscal year 23 supplemental budget and $6.7 million in the fiscal year 24 budget to OPA and PD. In total, when you add that to items we had already included in our December budget, it's about $4.7 million in fiscal year 23 and about $9.9 million in fiscal year 24 of increased investment in these two sections. In the Office of Public Advocacy, this money is primarily going to a contractor rate and cap increase. So the contractors that are paid by the Office of Public Advocacy to defend defendants in these cases hadn't been adjusted in quite some time. For those who were here last session, you may recall there's a bill that addressed attorney pay for state of Alaska attorneys, increasing their pay by 20%. This budget increment would allow us to provide that 20% increase to our contracted attorneys through the rates paid to them by the Office of Public Advocacy. So effectively, you know, applying that same policy to ensure that, you know, those contracted attorneys are paid well enough to actually come and, you know, work on these cases that we need them to. We also increase the cap of the number of hours that those attorneys are able to bill to those cases. What the office found is that the number of hours it takes to defend a felony or an unclassified or a Class A felony was significantly greater than that cap allowed for. So this increment allows them to expand the cap while also expanding the hourly rate to ensure that it's actually advantageous for a contractor to take one of these contracts. In the Public Defender Agency, some of this is one-time funding just to bring in contractor support to work through the backlog, but also funding related to training to improve their recruitment and retention, and some additional funding for their most serious felony caseloads so that they can meet the level of adequacy that they need to in order to address those cases. The second large emergent issue that we've been facing is in the Department of Public Health and Public Assistance, and dealing with the backlog, both the backlog in Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program payments, SNAP payments or food stamps, as well as the looming issue of Medicaid eligibility redetermination. And so in the amended budget, we have a number of items, both in fiscal year 23 and fiscal year 24, to address both of those. In 23, we have about $3 million in unrestricted general fund, matching to about $4 million in federal funds related to specifically that backlog application processing and the startup of the redeterminations of Medicaid. In 24, you have a similar add to public assistance for a full year of that, you know, backlog and processing support, about $9 million in UGF and about $9 million in Fed. We also have a replacement of the eligibility system. This is a project that's been going on for about a decade, and that this appropriation would fund that final phase. Currently, that section, a big part of the slowdown in their ability to process applications comes from being in two different systems. And so in order to alleviate that burden and allow them to process better in the future, we need to finally complete that IT project.
I also wanted to make note that because I have not wasn't familiar with the technology, but welcome to Representative Colomb, who is online. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Representative Colomb will understand my question because we're on the admin subcommittee and the discussion around mainframes in different agencies has been something we've been talking about. So I'm wanting a little clarification on that last capital project where it's mainframe replacement and wondering what we're replacing it with. Are we going to another mainframe, or are we migrating to modern systems, cloud-based systems?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, we are certainly moving away from the mainframe, not replacing it with a new mainframe. Yes.
Thank you for that clarification. Thank you.
And the third item that I'd like to highlight on the slides before we move to the spreadsheets is the Alaska Marine Highway System. So for those that have been following this are likely aware the state received a considerable amount of federal grants, $286 million in federal grants for the Marine Highway System. But those grants do require match. So we sat down with the Department of Transportation, and they put together a plan on how to satisfy those match requirements with the least amount of state funds possible. So within the operating side of the Marine Highway System, the match requirement is $44 million. They're able to actually accommodate that within appropriations they already have in the operating budget. So they didn't need an additional appropriation for match, per se, on the operating side. However, the award of federal receipts for the operating system was less than the amount of federal receipts budgeted or appropriated in the appropriation bill last year. And so we're proposing a switch of some of those federal receipts to Marine Highway System funds, the farebox recovery, so that they can ensure they're able to continue the full operation. So not necessarily required match, but just a smaller federal award than anticipated. They also received an award for replacement of the MV Tustamina. The match for that is actually being pulled out of an existing capital appropriation from fiscal year 18. That was from the vessel replacement funds. That appropriation was for the Tustamina vessel replacement, so the scope of the appropriation matches to this federal award. There's another $8.6 million for design work on another replacement vessel, and so we have a capital amendment to draw $2.1 million from the vessel replacement fund to match to that program. The remaining $163.7 million in capital projects, one for an electric ferry, some for dock infrastructure, and then modernization of existing vessels. The match for that is coming from a concept called toll match credits. And that is a way that we're able to capture other federal dollars to use as match for this federal program by using credits from toll receipts or the Marine Highway System Fund, which on a federal level are classified as toll receipts, using prior year expenditures of those funds to the maintenance of the vessels as a credit towards using federal funds in the current year to match other federal funds. And I'll say this is a very new concept for the state. We've never had to utilize this federal tool. We've been working with our federal partners to ensure that we're understanding these rules properly. And we have provided a white paper on the concept to the committee. And we do have somebody online from Department of Transportation because this is a fairly new financial mechanism that the state has an opportunity to use. So I understand there may be just it being fairly unique and new is a little bit different.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. Going back to the first, it's not really a bullet, but at the top of the slide there, the $44 million for operations requiring a supplemental operating amendment of $18.4 million, and you mentioning that there is a source for the remaining difference between the 44 and the 18.4. You probably said it, but tell me what the source of that extra money is.
Yes, through the Chair, Representative Ortiz. The $18.4 million would be coming from the Marine Highway System Fund, so the toll box recovery. Within the broader operating budget for Marine Highways, they have several fund sources in this year's budget. There's that $18.4 that we're adding, the federal receipts from this grant, a general fund appropriation that was made in the current current fiscal year budget, and then there's also a contingency appropriation that said that if the federal receipts come in less than what was appropriated, then $20 million of additional general funds would be appropriated. So it's an existing appropriation. That contingency has been met. So that $20 million will also go towards the match. So an existing appropriation, the only new appropriation required is the $18 million in toll box recoveries. Okay. Or fare box recoveries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And so those are the ones I'm highlighting on the slides. With the will of the committee, I'd like to move to the actual spreadsheet packet of other amendments. Hopefully, I believe in your files you should have, I believe, 4 spreadsheets.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, yes.
Could we go back, before we move on to the spreadsheet, could we go back to slide 3, please? I have a question in relationship to that.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. Just so I'm clear on what this slide is telling us, with the supplemental, we're increasing we are eliminating the surplus that we thought we had with forward funding for education. With the supplemental, I understand that all the money, the 1.2 billion that we thought we were going to have when we left last session, is now gone because of less revenue than we thought we would have, and then also some added expenditures. But are we further below than just eliminating that surplus? Or, in other words, do we now have a deficit in the FY23 budget? Are we not only not having that $1.2 billion totally gone, but are we further down than that?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, we're effectively exactly balanced to the current revenue projection. So if you see kind of middle of this slide, K-12 forward funding deposit, the 0.1, that effectively represents the surplus, if you will, of 0.1.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And final
follow
question?
Up.
That question. From the same slide, so now with the amendments to the FY24 budget, our deficit, I think, was right around 300 and some million, and now with the amendments, it's 433 million. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I just need to clarify.
Thanks. Very good. Representative.
Just 322, I think, was the number.
Was the original number.
Representative Josephson?
Yes. Through the Chair, on page 4, the... Actually, I apologize. Page 5, the DPA increase. $9 million is where I'm looking. This equals 30 more personnel? Did I read that somewhere?
Through the Chair, Representative Josephson, there are 30 non-perm positions associated with this increase, yes.
Follow-up.
And is that in addition to the December 15th's 20 positions?
Through the Chair, Representative Josephson, yes, this is in addition to what was in the December 15th budget.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin.
I'm sorry. I was hoping through the Chair that you might give me a little more clarity on that. So it's $9 million for 30 positions total and no other, maybe they're training or something else. I'm looking at $300,000 per person.
Through the Chair, Representative Galvin, the $9 million in state dollars and $9 million in federal dollars are for more than just the non-perm personnel. There's aspects of this related to bringing on contractors to manage a call center and, you know, other aspects related to addressing that backlog other than just the personnel.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. So I guess I want one more, because you're using the terms clearing the backlog, but it's for FY24, so that doesn't start getting used till July 1. I certainly have been led to believe in other meetings that the backlog should be taken care of prior to that. So help me understand that.
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, so the FY24 amount is in addition to an FY23 supplemental. So we're not, we certainly are not planning to wait until July 1st to start addressing the backlog. The top half of this page shows an FY23 supplemental, and that FY23 supplemental represents, you know, the cost for the rest of the year of addressing the backlog. The FY24 amount, one thing I should have noted, you can see there's a date range of FY24 to 25. So basically what we're saying is that the surge in capacity needed is in both 23, you know, moving through the rest of this year, through 24 and into 25. Part of that is that part of this increase is related to the Medicaid redetermination, which is a kind of a rolling cycle of redetermination that we'll have to go through. So, you know, that's not necessarily something that can happen all at once. So there is definitely a time component to working through this issue.
One
follow-up, then Representative.
So I guess just the numerically, I'm concerned that, you know, we've got $3 million in addition to other efforts that we'd already put in there to clear up the backlog. But we're anticipating next fiscal year we'll need another $18 million to keep up with it. And I'm trying to figure out how come we're not putting another $10 million into right now to get caught up on top of it so that we're not continuing underwater.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, what we're looking at here is the work that can be accomplished between now and the close of the fiscal year. So the department will, you know, increase their capacity now. They'll have to operate under that increased capacity for, you know, through FY24, and that requires an appropriation in 23 for the 6 months, and then the appropriation in 24. If we put the entire amount in 23, the department wouldn't necessarily be able to execute on that. So the 23 amount represents what we'll be able to execute in that surge of capacity in fiscal year 23. And then the 24 amount represents ensuring that that surge in capacity continues to be funded through fiscal year 24. And as we're noting here, we'll likely need to continue that surge in capacity into fiscal year 25.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, I appreciate Representative Hannon's questions because I want to drill down just a little further. My question about 30 additional personnel, will those be fundable, if that's a word, with the FY23 supplemental? So does that $3,088,000, does that cover those part-time or full-time non-permanent positions in addition to the 20? Where I'm going with this is, if someone asks me how many people are working on this crisis, will I be able to say, assuming we pass this promptly, which is another question, that there would be about 50 people?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I would say every person at the Division of Public Assistance is working on this crisis. So it's not just the kind of marginal increase that we're talking about here. I think on kind of more specific details on staffing questions, I think we have the admin services director, or sorry, assistant commissioner, Josie Stern on the line, who might be able to give a little bit more detail to specific questions on staffing.
Ms. Stern, can you hear, have you heard the conversation and the question?
Yes, ma'am. Through the chair, I think it was Representative Josephson.
Yes.
The 30 positions are being added as part of the FY23 supplemental request, and they will carry forward into FY24.
Great. Thank you.
So I guess the question is if you hire more people with vacancies that you have and hiring problems you have, I mean, how are they going to increase the capacity?
Chair Johnson, so I would say that is part of why we have a portion of this as contractual costs. I can let Assistant Commissioner Stern might be able to speak to some of the strategies they're using for hiring as well, because that is, as we all know, a challenge throughout all state agencies right now.
Ms. Stern, do you have anything to add to that?
Thank you to the chair, for the record, Josie Stern, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Health. We are exploring letters of agreement to be able to compensate these workers for the time that they spend and the overtime that they spend to clear this backlog. And we are getting increased numbers of applicants, and we are being able to be successful to fill the role. So we are appreciative. It seems everybody's willing to help in on the effort. So we've been successful there.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Through the chair, I think for the previous speaker, the question would be, we've been successful there, so does that translate to we will be successful in distributing what we need to distribute as a pass-through for federal funds and for federal services?
Ms. Stern, did you hear the question?
Yes, ma'am. Through the chair to Representative Galvin, that is indeed our hope that with these incoming personnel that we will be able to clear the backlog and distribute funds as expediently as possible.
So unless there are further questions on the items on the slide, I'd like to direct the committee's attention to first spreadsheet, at least in my stack, is the one titled FY23 Sup Op Gov Amend. So the first item on this spreadsheet is one we've already touched on in the Office of Public Advocacy. The second item is an adjustment for a recently negotiated bargaining unit contract, the Team E, or the Teachers Association of Mount Edgecombe. And the item three is also associated with that contract adjustment. I'll note this spreadsheet here is covering items amending the FY23 supplemental budget. So there are four items amending the current fiscal year's budget. Items four through six are related to the public assistance issue that we were just discussing. Item seven is an adjustment in general funds, as the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs has found through discussions with their federal partners that some costs supported by general funds can actually be supported by a federal award. So they are able to reduce their general fund appropriation. Item eight is related to fire suppression activity. So this is the amount remaining needed to cover fires to date, as well as an estimate for spring wildfires. Item nine, I'm sorry, we have this broken up. That item eight was simply the estimate for spring wildfires. Item nine is the amount necessary to complete the payments for our fall and last year's fires. Item 10 is a reduction of $150,000. This was an appropriation related to a cash room in Juneau at Department of Revenue. They found a different way to accomplish the same need for the taxpayers, so they won't need these general funds. Moving to the next page, there is a technical reversal of an appropriation, $127 million in federal receipts in HFC. This is just correcting an item. It's not actually a loss of those federal receipts. Item 12 is a fund source change, just shifting between two other fund sources. An incorrect fund source was included in the fiscal year 23 budget. Item 13 is the item related to the marine highway system that we discussed, the $18 million in farebox recoveries to cover the reduced amount of federal award. And moving to the third page of this spreadsheet, item 17 is related to legal and advocacy services, public defender agency item we discussed earlier. Item 18 is what's called a ratification. So this is a prior fiscal year issue from fiscal year 2016, where a federal award eventually came in lower than the department that had initially billed the federal government. So the federal government reimbursed slightly less costs than we were anticipating. And so language is needed in the budget to clear up the accounting system and adjust for this $70,000 discrepancy in the books. And item 9 is the other half of the technical correction on the AHSC piece, adding back in the $127 million with corrected appropriation language. If there's no questions on the supplemental governor's amendments, the next spreadsheet, at least in my pile, is a single sheet titled FY 2023 Supplemental Capital Governor Amended. Right. And if everybody's found that.
Oh. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I did have a note here that I had a question regarding. This is line 4 around Medicaid, and I see there's lots of different ways these funds are going to be used to make sure that we're doing what needs to be done with regard to public assistance program. I'm wondering, particularly in light of the last few months, if there's also funds in here for emergencies in case we don't meet the requirements of getting, and worst case scenario, we're not able to deliver the changes in SNAP benefits or making sure that we have walked through the steps that we need to walk through as we look at eligibility requirements and such. Is there any fund pocket for that emergency if we're not actually getting these things to those who have severely high needs, particularly in the area of foods? Is there something in this pocket?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, is the question specifically, is there money here to provide some other form of relief directly to those beneficiaries?
Mm-hmm. Yes, if we're not able to deliver what we need to deliver.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, all that we have here is the resources necessary to do the eligibility determination work,
mm-hmm.
Not any, supplemental amount of money to a state-funded program for food relief.
Follow-up? I do see that it says things like contractual support, communication needs, temporary staffing and security, but none of those things are related to anything other than making sure that we are walking through the steps of eligibility. Is that correct then?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, yes, this appropriation is specifically related to the eligibility determination issue. What I will add, though, is that we've been working with the Department of Health and other departments in the state that have nexuses to food security to see if there's any of the existing appropriations that we have in the governor's food security initiative that could help to address this. I don't have anything specific to share on those efforts, just to say that actively, over the last several days, we've been working specifically to try and identify some way to address that need.
Thank you very much, Chair. Appreciate that effort.
So on the sheet titled FY23 Supplemental Capital Governor Amend, we have 4 items in the supplemental capital budget. The first is simply a scope change. The project at DMVA related to the Alaska Veterans Cemetery up in the Fairbanks region has had prior year appropriations. One is limited in the site location that it can be used at. since we've changed the site where that cemetery is being built, it requires a scope change to access that money for that project. And to ask the committee, do you all actually have this spreadsheet that I'm referencing to? Okay, yes, thank you. Item two is $4.3 million related to the ability to access unanticipated federal funds in the AIP or Airport Improvement Program. Item three is a reappropriation of capital projects that have been completed with a little bit of money left on them. They're being reappropriated for the scope of emergency weather and catastrophic event response at the Department of Transportation. And item four is a reduction of $64 million in federal receipts at the University of Alaska.
We're trying to make sure we have the spreadsheets here. Do you have it? Oh, it's the last page of this?
Last page.
Okay.
We're almost done.
Okay.
Took me a while to find it.
I'll get on the same page.
I apologize. Mine is not stapled. Okay. Sorry.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Mr. Steiner, my question has to do with the statewide airport improvement contingency. And it shows it as Department of Administration, and I'm just curious why that part of airports is in administration versus DOT.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I believe that is a typo. That should be Department of Transportation.
Thank you. That makes more sense to me.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Steiner, can you explain row four for us here on the capital amendments?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. Very briefly, this was a capital project put forward last year. The university had pursued this grant for $64 million in the Seward Marine Center, and ultimately the grant did not come through. And so this is taking that federal authority off the books as it's unnecessary. We do have a representative of the university on the line if you have more questions on that issue.
Follow up. What is the 94.4 million figure represent relative to the 64 million that they got? They got 30 million of it. Is that
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I'd actually like to defer kind of the specifics on that too. I believe we have Alicia Krockenberg from the university.
Hi, can you all hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Did you hear the question?
Okay, good. So this, for the record, this is Alicia Krockenberg with the University of Alaska. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I believe. So this was a $94.4 million grant that UAF applied for that dock. They did not get the grant award, but there are still other possible opportunities for a reduced amount of federal funding. So we have requested that the $64 million be taken from the $94 to leave a balance there in case we do get other awards. For that call, that need. So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right, and so unless there's other questions on those four items, the next spreadsheet, at least in my stack, is the fiscal year 24 operating governor amend. I'll give the committee a moment to make sure we find the right spreadsheet this time.
One that says 1 of 17 at the bottom?
Yes, 1 of 17 is first page. Okay. Item one on this spreadsheet is similar to a request in the supplemental budget that we released at the end of January. It's $80,000 in program receipt authority for the Office of Administrative Hearings for increases in cases they're hearing on behalf of others. Item two is a technical adjustment, swapping from capital improvement project receipts to interagency receipts in the Division of Finance. Just a technical adjustment to the fund sources used in the budget with no net impact. Items three in the Division of Personnel, we're adding one strategic human resources consultant for recruitment to develop a strategic recruitment plan and assist at a statewide level on the ability to recruit state employees. Items four through eight were touched on in my earlier slides. They're related to the issues at the Office of Public Advocacy and the Public Defender Agency. Item nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, and 14 on this page are all related to salary and benefit adjustments that were omitted from the Department of Commerce's initial budget submission. Moving to the next page, items 15 through 23 are also related to that same issue of having the salary and benefit adjustments omitted from the Department of Commerce budget. Item 24 is an addition of 12 staff and $1.6 million in corporate licensing receipts in the corporation business in the professional licensing division. And this is to try to address some of the significant workload increases they have seen recently, impacting their ability to provide timely license determinations to those entering the workforce in Alaska. Item 25 through 29, finishing out this page, also are related to the salary and benefit adjustment omission. On page three, items 30 through 41 are also associated with the salary adjustment item. Item 42 is $5 million, a one-time appropriation of $5 million for the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute to help assist in their efforts in marketing Alaska seafood and business development in the state. Items 43 and 44, again, are the omission of salary and benefit adjustments. Moving to page four, items 45 through 48, again, are the last of those adjustments or corrections to salary and benefit adjustments. Item 49 is an increase in the Department of Corrections. This item was included in the supplemental budget as well. It is an investigator related to investigating crimes committed by inmates in correctional institutions. Item 15, or 50 rather, is an increase in federal authority due to an increase in the federal funds available to the Department of Education. Just adjusting that number in the budget of available federal funds that get passed on to school districts. Item 51, there will be several others related to this item 51. What we're looking at doing in this amendment is moving the technical vocational education program from the numbers section of the appropriation bill to the language section. The reason for that is that program is a variable amount that pays into that program. It always comes in as an estimate at the start of the year and then has to be adjusted in budget amendments through the process. Moving it to the language section would ensure that we would have an estimated to be appropriation, which would allow that distribution to those grant recipients of the TVET program to adjust based on actual collections in, rather than being reliant on the need for small supplemental budget adjustments when there's a change in the revenue into the TVET program. Item 52 is a correction of a transaction type. So the original transaction was simply an increment of $20,000. But upon further review with the Council on the Arts, it's only a one-time need, so this changes it to a one-time increment. Item 54 is the FY24 portion of that team contract we discussed in the supplemental section. Item 25 is a increase in fees in the program administration and operations section in post-secondary education. This is related to a regulation package that they have put forward. Item 56 is simply adjusting authority in the Department of Environmental Conservation as uncollectible authority.
Is there any, we want to just take a little breather for a minute and see if anyone has any questions. Put your edge in.
Yes, stretch. And on number 49, I see Ms. West is online. Maybe we can get some more information on the $250,000 being added for Alaska State Trooper to investigate in-custody inmate deaths and report felony and misdemeanor criminal cases. And maybe just to give a little bit more clarity on the picture, you see in 2022, there was 18 deaths. I don't think any of those were considered homicides. But this is future-looking, and is this position being tasked with broader responsibilities beyond inmate deaths? Maybe just a little bit of information would be helpful.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, if I could defer that question to Administrative Services Director Terry West with the Department of Corrections. I do know it is a broader issue than just that.
For the record, this is Terry West, Director of Division of Administrative Services for the Department of Corrections. Through the chair, to Chair Edgman, this funding is requested and it's to fund a full-time trooper for inmate death investigation, but also includes suicide deaths, and to ensure that there's timely reporting of the outcomes of those investigations. The intent is also to establish cooperative efforts to streamline efforts for efficiencies when there are potential inmate felony and misdemeanor criminal cases.
Paul?
Very good, then. Thank you. That's appreciated. It's I don't think this came up in the subcommittee, and that's why I'm sort of digging into this a little bit. It's interesting. I thought we were challenged for in terms of number of overall troopers, and that it would take a trooper to investigate a lot of these deaths, which I think I understand the rationale for sure, but I'm just processing the fact that we'd spent $250,000 to have a state trooper to investigate deaths that I guess heretofore maybe, you know, the number wasn't as high as 18 in years past, but I don't think we ever came close to having a trooper on staff to investigate.
This is Terry West, Director, Division of Admin Services for Corrections again. To the chair, just for clarification, this would be for a retired DPS trooper to come on and support these activities.
Okay, well, through the chair, I think I'll pose further questions at the subcommittee level. I think that'd be more appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Making note to be prepared for the subcommittee questions. Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, item 42, Alaska Seafood Marketing. $5 million. What is the total that the what is the amount of seafood dollar wise that we produce every year here in the state? Do you have that?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, I think unless Administrative Services Director Hannah Lager knows that off the top of your head, I'm guessing we'll have to get that back to you in writing.
That would be great to get back to you. I'm just curious. Yeah, $5 million where they're using our resource and selling our resources, but we're also doing the advertising for them in the tune of $5 million. Is that the only appropriation, or is there extra on top of that?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, its primary source of funding is from assessments paid in by those engaged in the seafood industry. This is in addition to that amount paid in by those, you know, operators in the seafood industry. So it is adding some state support to an otherwise entirely industry-supported organization.
And this comes right out of general funds?
Correct.
Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Mr. Steininger, my question is about item number 56, eliminate uncollectible interagency receipt authority. And I'm just wondering why we're uncollectible from our own agencies.
Yes, through the chair, Representative Hannon, what can sometimes happen? So the interagency receipt authority, generally speaking, that's used when there's, you know, one agency is doing work on behalf of another. Most of the time, that's something like a rate paid to the department administration to do accounting work or to, you know, do IT work for a department. But sometimes there's arrangements where, you know, one department may have work that needs to be done on a project that's more in the expertise of another. So Department of Environmental Conservation may occasionally do support work for, you know, a road project by DOT or a project by DNR where they need the expertise of the scientists at DEC. The budgets that get loaded in for that type of arrangement often are an estimate. And what DEC found was that, you know, this estimate over the last several years was just higher than the amount of work that they were receiving in requests from those other agencies. And so to avoid having a budget that kind of overstates the actual resources they have, because we often kind of refer to it as hollow authority where they can't really collect the revenue. To avoid kind of a misstatement of the resources available, they want to adjust this down to clarify what their actual projections of those collections are.
Can I
follow up, Representative Hammond?
So I just want to, I think I understand it, but I want to phrase it in a slightly different way. So it is that when they put their budget in, they estimated that they would have the responsibility for $203,000 more than other agencies have been using of theirs. So they don't need as much authority. It's not that it's uncollectible. It's that nobody's using that extra $203,000 versus it. Because the term is uncollectible, which would seem like DOT used it but can't pay them. But what you're saying is it was excess authority.
Through the chair, Representative Hannah, yes. That's
okay.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. And I understand that vernacular and accounting terms aren't the same, so I confuse myself sometimes.
Thank you.
So moving to page 5 on row 57. Row 57 is looking at an opportunity to use federal receipts to fix some very out-of-date office furniture in the DEC building in Anchorage. They have an opportunity to charge this off to federal receipts, and so there's a one-time item to accomplish that task. Item 58 is in spill prevention and response. It's a federal grant related to contaminated lands on ANCSA lands. Item 59 is $213,000. This is a water infrastructure grant program that is a recent award to the department. And item 60 is that same program, but it is, so
I guess to kind of roll back this program, it was awarded in the first year. They're collecting 2 years worth of funding. So this is that second year worth of funding, but it is only a one-time item. They'll just need that single year funding going forward. Item 61 is $1 million in a good neighbor authority program to the Division of Water. Now, item 62 is about $5 million for the assumption of primacy over the 404 program. This will allow the state of Alaska to take primacy over this permitting activity and help move permits along for activity within the state. Item 63 is in the Alaska Pioneer Homes. A recent bill changed the statute on how the rates are calculated. This is adjusting for the statutorily required rate increase in regs. Item 64 is to restore $500,000 of fish and game funds for a variety of sport fish projects that were ceased during the COVID pandemic just due to operational concerns or operational constraints, rather. Item 65, also in fish and game, is a fund change to just change, adjust for the way that they're accounting for some of their administrative costs and billing it out to different divisions. Item 66 is a increase in authority to support their facilities maintenance unit. Item 67 is $900,000 of prior year collected program receipts that they wish to use in fiscal year 24, so program receipts that have built up over time. And item 68 is $150,000 for a subsistence harvest survey.
All right, then that is the end of page 5. Take a breather, ask if there's any questions. Again, we'll move on to page 6.
On page 6, item number 69 in the Office of the Governor is a security enhancement to the Governor's Office security, $300,000 and 2 non-permanent positions. Item number 70 in the Office of Management and Budget is reestablishing an audit unit that is a required activity under statute that hasn't been performed in a number of years. So this adds an internal auditor to the Office of Management and Budget. Item 71 is in the Department of Health, Behavioral Health, $750,000 in a grant for mental health program directors. Item 72 is about $700,000 in a mental health trust item, the Crisis Now Continuum of Care grants. And this was a recommendation from the trust. Item 73 is an increase, it is a unit of 6 individuals who will work on increasing our ability to collect recoveries and rebates in the Medicaid program. So we're able to collect money back on drug rebates, as well as increase our federal participation through certain activities that can be done. Adding a unit of people should increase our ability to get some of those enhanced participations from the federal government. On row 74, we have a $2.4 million preschool development grant match. This is also in a partnership with the Alaska Mental Health Trust. On item 75 in emergency programs is a $75,000 recommendation by the Mental Health Trust for a comprehensive program planning coordinator. Item 76, again, a Mental Health Trust recommendation for $300,000 related to the Continuum of Care grants. 77 is related to data collection, a recommendation from the trust for $45,000. And item 78 is $570,000 in program receipts for the public health laboratories to help support work they do on behalf of testing and other work the lab does on behalf of others, non-state entities.
All I have a question on item number 74 on the child care benefits or federal preschool development grant. Is that, will that be able to be applied to our is that our own preschool or pre-K that was part of the REEDS Act? I mean, will that be able to be applied to that, or is that for something that's more standalone, like, say, Head Start or something like that?
Chair Johnson, I might have to get back to you with the answer unless Assistant Commissioner Stern might be able to speak to that from the department.
Commissioner Stern, did you hear the...
Thank you for the record, Jody Stern, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Health. To the Chair, Representative Johnson, I'm going to have to get back to you with that.
All right. Thank you. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Item 69, the security enhancement, I have two questions, which is how many currently do we have? I wasn't sure if it was two or four. And why are they non-perm versus increasing the security detail and making them permanent?
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, I might actually defer that question to Director Lowenstein, the Administrative Services Director for the Office of the Governor.
Good afternoon. For the record, this is Sherry Lowenstein. Are you hearing me okay?
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Thank you. For the record, again, this is Sherry Lowenstein, the Administrative Services Director for the Office of the Governor. At this time, if these two positions are approved, we will have a total of 9 non-permanent positions. The reason they are non-permanent is because we, as a general rule, are able to hire retired police officers. That makes them familiar with the work, the surroundings, and the logistics, and just the current way of the world that we have, so to speak. So they're the best qualified, and they've generally retired out of a police station.
Follow up, Representative Hannon.
So I'm not doubting the need. I'm just trying to understand. So because they're retirees, they have to be non-perms? Is that?
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon. Yes, that is accurate.
Okay.
And that is because if they are an active employee, they will not be able to be in retired status.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Moving to page 7. Item 79 is another recommendation from the Mental Health Trust, $50,000 for the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. Item 80 is an addition of a non-perm position. The position will be funded with existing resources. It's an intern to help support the Chief Medical Officer. Item 81 is $24.4 million for the Medicaid program. This increment addresses the taper down of the enhanced FMAP, so the reduction in federal match to the program. It also addresses some federally required rate increases that the state must accommodate within the program. Item 82 is a reduction of $255,000 in the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. It's actually a transfer over to another section from the Commissioner's Office to the Management Services section, just realigning that position. So you have the reduction here on row 82, the increase on 84, transferring that position. On row 83, this is related to that change from the numbers section to the language section for the technical vocational education program to allow it to be able to adjust with those estimated receipts into the program. 85 is $93,000. It's support for the Governor's Safety and Health Conference. It's a conference that occurs, I believe it's every 3 years. And that conference requires some budget authority in order to execute. On 86, in the Alaska Vocation Technical Education Center, We have another adjustment related to that TVEP change. 87, in the Department of Law Criminal Division, we have a criminal investigator related to election fraud, conflict cases, rural homicides, felony sex offenses, and other violent crimes. So just an addition to matters under special prosecution in the Department of Law. On 88 in the Civil Division, there's the addition of an attorney 5 for parental rights and education advocacy, or advocate for education and parental rights, $200,000 in one position.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Steininger, this Row 88 was taken up today in Representative Cronk's subcommittee. How do you envision this position working? Would this individual be sitting behind a desk and waiting for the action to come to him or her, or would they? How would they do this job?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I think I'd have to defer the day-to-day job duties to the department. Now, we do have the Administrative Services Director online, but that might be more of a question for the Assistant Attorney General of the over that section.
Thank you.
Moving to page 8 on row 89, also in the Civil Division, is to add an attorney to lead on tribal law issues, and $200,000 in one position. Row 90 in the Office of the Commissioner of Military and Veterans Affairs is an adjustment to align anticipated revenues with the expenditure authority to ensure that they don't overstate the budget of what they're able to collect in that section. On row 91, also in the Office of Commissioner, is a fund change of unavailable authority to support the Alaska State Defense Force expansion, $40,000 shifted to general funds. Row 92 is the addition of a program coordinator to coordinate the Alaska Veterans Cemetery construction. That's a capital project included in the capital budget. This position will coordinate the build-out of the cemetery and eventually transition into the position that will operate that cemetery. On row 80 or 93, in Parks and Outdoor Recreation, there's a reversal of an item in the governor's budget, $100,000 in general fund. On 94, is addressing the same need but using park receipts at a slightly higher amount, $272,000, to ensure that the identified parks provide safe places for public access, trying to address the same need as the item that was removed on row 93, but in a slightly different way as the department has looked at how they'll address the need. On row 95 in the Department of Public Safety, there's an increment for domestic violence and sexual assault investigator to fund that position, $114,000. Row 96, in rural trooper housing, is $3 million in federal congressionally designated or congressionally directed spending, a grant to public safety for trooper housing. Row 97 reflects increased costs of leases that the department have discovered. A lot of the leases that they have, the rural troopers living in, have gone up in price over the last year. Row 98 is an increase in dispatch services costs for the Soldotna Public Safety Communication Center. The cost of that contract is up $700,000. Row 99 is an adjustment similar to an item included in our supplemental budget. We've seen higher costs for moving costs for troopers, particularly moving out into rural Alaska. And this ensures that they have enough budget money in their base budget to fund those moves. Similarly, on row 100 is a cost associated with a supplemental that we request in our supplemental budget related to vehicle operations, maintenance, and fuel. This is to ensure they're able to pay the depreciation on trooper vehicles.
Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Chair Johnson, and I'm hoping that we have someone from the Department of Law, because my question is about 89, adding one attorney on tribal law issues. It's describing working on compacting, but I know that the Attorney General has recently filed a suit against the feds on some tribal land transfer issues, and so I'm wondering if it's that attorney would do both the compacting and the suit against the Department of Interior on tribal land transfers.
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, we do have Director LeBlanc, who's an admin services director for the department, on the line. She may be able to speak to that, but we may be able to get back to you in writing as well.
Ms. LeBlanc, did you hear the question?
Hello, yes, this is, for the record, Amber LeBlanc, the Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Law. I will have to speak with the Deputy Attorney General, Mills, and we'll respond in writing for that.
Thank you.
Moving to page 9, item 101. In the Department of Public Safety, $582,000 related to internet connectivity in rural posts. This item, you can see, is labeled as an Inc. T. That means we believe this to be a temporary need that will exist until some of the federal broadband money is able to reduce the cost of internet in some of these rural areas. So this is an item that we think we may be able to adjust out of the budget at a later date. On item 102 is $60,000 related to the increased cost of uniforms for wildlife troopers. Item 103 is $1.8 million for wildlife troopers related to a variety of rising costs that the division has been incurring. On 104 is $241,000, similar to the item for state troopers. This is for wildlife troopers related to maintenance and depreciation on their vehicles. On 105, we have an increase of $2.8 million for the Village Public Safety Officers Program. This will actually add 10 additional VPSOs and provide for additional funding for housing allowances for those existing VPSOs. So a significant expansion in that program to provide rural public safety. Item 106 in Department of Public Safety is actually a reduction. This is a decrease in the startup costs for some of the new positions that they're looking to add at Criminal Justice Information Systems. Moving to the Department of Revenue on item 107, the Mental Health Trust have a recommendation for $100,000 of Mental Health Trust money to fund discharge incentive grants. On row 108 in the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, $1.2 million associated with incentive compensation for the investment staff at APFC. On row 109 is $67,000 for the Central Highways and Aviation Unit for wayside improvements. You'll see this in the other regions as well. This is a investment to ensure that some of the waysides, you know, restrooms on highway waysides, are better cared for throughout the state.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, the $1.2 million for line 108 direct program. Investment staff. How many staff are we talking about?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski, I might have to get back to you, although we do have Director Demelin from the Department of Revenue online who may have the answer to that question.
Why don't you just get back to me?
Okay. Moving to page 10, row 110 is adding the Dalton Highway shift change to the base operating budget at a cost of $1.3 million. This is moving Dalton Highway to a two-week on, two-week off schedule. It's something the department did using federal COVID funds that they saw as a pretty effective way to recruit and retain staff to work on that road. On row 111 is another item for the wayside improvements. That's for the northern region for $300,000. 112 is $350,000 related to maintenance of the Sitka Airport to ensure we're able to keep that airport open. It used to receive funds from the International Airport System as a backup airport for landings in Anchorage. New FAA regulations no longer require it to serve as a backup airport, so it can't receive funds from the International Airport System and instead needs state support to remain open. On 113 is $50,000 related to rural airport cost increases. These are many different rural airports, small cost increases that we're seeing that can't be accommodated in the existing budget. On 114, we have another item related to the TVET program. This, the grant in the university. This, again, is the piece moving it from the numbers section to the language section of the appropriation bill. Item 115 and 116 are both related to the University of Alaska's compensation increases. These are the bargaining unit agreements for university employees, adding in the funding for that negotiated agreement. On 117 is simply a technical change, updating the description of the increment for the WAMI program at the university. And item 118 is also related to those compensation increases. Item 119 is a mental health trust recommendation in the Anchorage campus for a training cooperative. Item 120 is another adjustment related to the TVET program. Items 121 through 123 are related to those compensation increases, the bargaining unit agreements. Item 124, again, is a TVEP increase or TVEP adjustment. And the rest of the items on this page through the bottom are either related to those salary adjustments or the TVEP program adjustment. Items 130 through the end of this page at 142 are all either related to the contract adjustments, the salary adjustments for contracts, or the TVET move to the language section of the bill. As are all of the items on page 13 as well.
Madam
Chair. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mrs. Steininger, just to confirm what I believe, the professors' union, for lack of a better word, that their contract, if approved, is retroactive to July 1. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that is my understanding, but that might be a better question for the university.
Could we quickly query?
I'm sorry.
We have Alicia Kruckenberg on the line who might be able to answer that question.
Thank you. This is Alicia with the university, for the record. Could you repeat the question? Were you asking about the salary? I'll let you repeat the question, please.
Sure.
Sorry.
Through the chair, Ms. Kruckenberg, I believe the university professors are receiving 3% in FY23 and then 2.75 and 2.75. So if adopted, these increases would go back to July 1 of last summer, right?
That's correct. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
On page 14, items 156 and through 158 are, again, these are related to the TVEP change or to the salary adjustments. Item 159 is from the court system, the judiciary. It is a slight adjustment to ensure that there is enough authority in the Commission on Judicial Conduct to fund the anticipated number of positions hired. Moving to page 15, this section is moving into the language section of the appropriation bill and amendments associated with that. On row 163 is an amendment to conform the ADA dividend language to the dividend that was adopted by the board. It was adopted subsequent to the appropriation bill being released on December 15th. So this is a conforming amendment to that dividend. Item 164 is a small correction to the language for the Department of Education related to multi-year federal appropriations. Item 165 is the language section portion of the TVEP program change that I have been mentioning on several of the pages prior. Item 166 is a language item associated with the Medicaid and public assistance item we discussed on my earlier slides. Items 167 through 169 are also related to the TVEP adjustment. On page 16, items 170 through 181 are all of the language side pieces of the TVEP program change. On page 17, items 182 and 183 are both associated with the TVEP change. Items 184 through 187 are adjustments to the debt service section of the bill. So the Department of Revenue debt management section found that they are able to effectively refinance a couple of old general obligation bonds to reduce the payments that need to be made, to reduce the annual payments. It saves about $600,000 in fiscal year 24, and these are just changes to the appropriation bill to reflect that. On page 188 is, again, the adjustment to the technical vocational education program language. Item 189 is a deposit into the election fund. This is a grant from the Help America Vote Act. It's a federal grant of $1 million matched by $200,000 in federal funds that goes towards costs of maintaining elections. And item 190 is a capitalization of $7.5 million into the Renewable Energy Grant Fund to make payments towards Renewable Energy Grant Fund recipients. And that is the end of that spreadsheet. There is one more spreadsheet. The final spreadsheet is titled 2024 Capital Governor Amend. It will be labeled page 1 of 6 on the first page. So item 1 on this spreadsheet is $1 million to address a backlog of aging IT infrastructure. So these are, you know, switches, routers, things, devices, IT hardware that maintains the infrastructure in state facilities. A lot of these items have become old and outdated and are no longer supported by their vendors. And so we're not able to do, you know, up-to-date security patching. So the department requires some money to go to replace the oldest of that equipment. Item number two is $376,000 of DMV receipts. This is to remodel the restrooms in the University Center DMV office. Item three is $2.2 million to digitize payroll services in the Division of Finance payroll section. This should help ensure that we're able to alleviate some of the pressures on the payroll division by automating some of their processes and making it a little bit less manual and staff heavy work. On row four is $1 million for a statewide salary survey. So this is looking at the salaries of all job classes throughout the state system. As we have looked at our recruitment and retention issues, one thing that has come to light is that a lot of our job classes and a lot of the employment in the state is in some cases out of line with salaries that may be available in other states. So this is money to do a global study rather than one off, one at a time in each job class, to do a global study of all job classes to determine if the salaries being paid by the state are actually competitive enough to recruit qualified personnel.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Steininger, on line four on the survey you just mentioned, What we often hear about is that there would be a couple classes of jobs in one or two departments. What you're reporting is that there's going to be a wholesale review of, I guess, thousands of positions. And so at the end of it, we'll know a great deal about what adjustments need to be made, just sort of writ large. Is that the hope?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes. The hope here is that the result of this survey is that we have credible information to guide policymakers in trying to address the issue of retention as it relates to salary.
Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. On that same issue, does this include a geographic pay differential study, or is that a separate study?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, as scoped right now, it does not include a geographical pay differential study, just look at salaries. On item five is a removal of a $10 million item related to the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation Hydrogen Hub Project. As the corporation has pursued that project, they found it is no longer really viable for the state as a competitive entity in that program. Item six is in the Alaska Energy Authority, $3.7 million in new energy efficiency revolving loan fund programs and federal receipts. Item seven, also the Alaska Energy Authority, is $74.5 million in home energy and high efficiency rebate allocations that we're receiving from the federal government. Item eight is the corresponding capital project related to the fund capitalization for round 15 of the renewable energy project grants. Item nine is a $5 million appropriation to the Alaska Travel Industry Association. Item 10 is $10 million in federal receipts for the Fairbanks PM 2.5 non-attainment area voluntary heating device changeout program. Item 11 is $1 million in federal funds for sport fish hatcheries deferred maintenance. This is an amendment of a project already put forward that simply omitted the federal funds associated with the funds included in the original project. Item 12 is a election security project under the Help America Vote Act. Item 13 is $7 million to address our voter registration and Election Management Systems in the Division of Elections. Item 14 is a project I already discussed on my slides related to the replacement of the eligibility information systems and the transition off of the mainframe for the Department of Public Assistance. Item 15 is additional funding for the State Homeland Security Grant Program, initially included in the governor's budget. The amount of the award is greater than was included in that initial budget request in December. Row 16 is a summary of the next two projects. They are both congressionally directed spending projects through the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. One is for Snake Point erosion mitigation, the other for emergency response shelters. Item 19 is $600,000 to address safety issues at the Geological Materials Center in Anchorage. These safety issues are a ongoing result of the earthquake from 2018 that need to be addressed. Item 20 is $1 million in federal funds for Potter Marsh Watershed Conservation Projects. This is phase two. 21 is $7.5 million for the Department of Public Safety to replace the patrol vessel Enforcer. That vessel has had to be tied up and can no longer be used due to its condition. This would allow for rebuild of a vessel to replace it to patrol the southeast waters. Item 22 is a addition of a project that was omitted from the governor's original budget unintentionally. This is the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation Beneficiary and Special Needs Housing Project. $2.75 million in unrestricted general fund as well as AHFC dividend payments. Item 23 is an adjustment to the state equipment fleet replacement project to ensure there's enough authority to replace depreciated vehicles. Item 24 is $6 million from the public building fund to address deferred maintenance of public building fund buildings. Row 25 is a summary of several of these lines showing the net change, replacing certain projects with projects that are listed below. These projects are within the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So in our initial, in the initial budget that we released on December 15th, we included a placeholder amount for both the Surface Transportation Program and the Aviation Improvement Program. In these amendments, over the next several pages, you will see allocations of those programs to the specific projects on that project plan ran by DOT. And so most of these projects are related to that allocation. We can go through each individual project or simply defer to any questions on specific projects within the Department of Transportation Surface Transportation Program.
All right, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Mr. Steininger, on item number 17, where's Snag Point?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I might have to defer that to Bob Ernesay, the executive or the administrative services director of DMVA.
I'm Dillingham.
Dillingham. Thank you.
We don't want it then.
No. One thing to highlight within the breakout of the Department of Transportation allocations. One new larger dollar federal program coming in is the NOM Emergency Repairs for the West Coast Alaska Storm. That's $125 million in federal receipts. That is outside of that breakout of the Surface Transportation Program that I discussed earlier. Otherwise, these items are the various portions of that overall federal program that was included in the original December budget. On the top of page 2, items 33 through 38 are all associated with the Marine Highway grant for the Marine Highway funds I discussed on an earlier slide. Items 40 through 43, these general fund dollars are not new in this amendment package. This is just reflecting the match associated with the line out of the surface transportation program. Items 45 through 68 on this page are the allocations of the Aviation Improvement Program, as are lines 69 through 94 on the following page. Here you can see the various state airports that are being improved or remodeled or maintained under that program. On page 3, line 96 through page 6, line 222 are the allocations of the surface transportation program itself. And you can see listed by milepost which roads, which intersections are being maintained or improved upon under the surface transportation infrastructure program. And on the final page, page 6, in the capital language section of the capital bill is a reappropriation of the Fairbanks Use Facility project. There's a project for the Fairbanks Use Facility that in the split of the Department of Health and Social Services, the project was inadvertently sent to the Department of Health. But the Fairbanks Use Facility actually is under the operation of the Department of Family and Community Services. So this simply corrects that error.
All right. I think that brings us to the end of our presentation. And sitting in for Co-Chair Johnson, who got called away. Any comments or questions?
Just real quick.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Edgman. Through the chair, do we have a total here somewhere?
Through the chair, Representative Tomaszewski. On slide 2, the total in unrestricted general fund for FY23 is $9.2 million. For FY24, $106.3 for a total of $115.5 across the two fiscal years in unrestricted general fund.
Okay, thank you.
Not seeing any more questions or comments to come before the committee. We'll be obviously covering a lot of these capital budget items in greater detail as well as operating in later meetings. Our next meeting will be tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. I'm just kidding. The next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for Monday at 1:30 p.m. And at that time, we will receive an overview of the wildland fire suppression costs. And presenting the overview will be Helgi Eng, Director of the Division of Forestry and Fire Protection and Department of Natural Resources. And so with no further business to come before the committee, we're adjourned at 3:10 p.m.